Support for this podcast comes from San Francisco International Airport. Some want it all. SFO wants zero. Zero landfill waste, net carbon, and net energy by 2030. Learn more about the triple zero goal at flysfo.com.
From KQED.
Hey, everybody, from KQED Public Radio, Happy New Year. This is Political Breakdown. I'm Scott Schaefer.
And I'm Marisa Lagos. And today on The Breakdown, the first of 22, we are going to talk about the anniversary of the January 6th insurrection. We're also going to dust off our crystal balls and talk about the big political stories likely to unfold in 2022. Don't call it a prediction, though. We'll be joined by Joe Garofoli. He is senior political writer with the San Francisco Chronicle.
Well, unhappily, one of those stories already happened this week. We don't have to predict it. San Diego Assemblywoman Lorena Gonzalez, one of the most powerful lawmakers in Sacramento with a long list of accomplishments, announced she was resigning her seat to take a big job with organized labor.
We're going to talk about that decision with her, hear her reflections on her past and future career. Maybe there's a crystal ball involved here, Scott. Maybe a little capital gossip.
Oh, I'm all ears. Well, we're delighted to welcome her back to Political Breakdown. Lorena Gonzalez, Happy New Year. Congratulations. I guess that's the word on your new job.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm really excited. It's my first day free of the title of assembly member. I just signed the acceptance to return to organized labor as a
what is your title?
Your transition. You're kind of in transition, right?
I am. I have no title. That's why I stopped myself from saying it. I have absolutely no title. I'm employed by the California Labor Federation in anticipation of becoming its executive secretary treasurer in July. So spending the next 6 months just getting my feet wet and getting a good view of what's going on in organized labor internally and externally.
Well, we want to get to all of that, but we do want to ask you how you're doing, because you're as one of the presents from your going away party was someone who was there was infected with COVID, one of your colleagues, in fact, in the assembly. How are you doing? I mean, you're already sort of dealing with recovering from cancer, so you look fantastic. We can
attest
to that.
Yeah, we can report that.
Thank you. Well, I will say Senator Becker, who has stated that he is now COVID positive and stated that he was at a little kind of get together that a number of us had. I'm fine. I tested. I'm negative. I'll continue to test and do whatever the CDC guidelines say I need to do. I can assure everybody that people who were not eating or drinking were wearing N95 masks, and some people chose not to eat or drink at all. So it was a large area, not super small, packed together. It's unfortunate, but as we see right now, the Omicron is just making its way everywhere. But I gave Josh Becker a little bit of a rib. He gets a little bit of a pass. You know, he was the jockey for my AB 701 last year, my bill about Amazon workers. And so I still am thankful for that. And but I gave him a little rib because he came down to play some of my, he carries all of our favorite music on his Spotify. He has a Spotify with like different members' favorite music. So he came down to play me some Selena and gave us all some COVID exposure while he was there.
Some Selena and some
Rona. There's your gossip. There's your gossip. Well, yeah. We got to wonder how this year is going to play out for the legislature. But I'm curious, like leaving, I think we should mention Fox News led the story about your resignation with a headline with expletives that you had directed at one point to Donald Trump and Elon Musk. You've gotten a lot of attention and done a lot of really big legislation. Is there any unfinished business that you are bummed about walking away from this year?
You know, there is. There always is going to be, right? So I have some bills that were two-year bills that I'm hopeful but I can't advocate for, that they're picked up and taken. But one of the things that I don't know until I have a chance to get back to advocating directly to the legislature, which will be a year and a half from now, is staff unionization. And that's just something personally that I had hoped to finish before I left. And it just timing wise, I couldn't.
This is legislative staff?
Yeah. For me, one of the things that from day one, I had a hard time kind of figuring out is the fact that the legislature exempts itself from a lot of labor laws, and that our staff, despite what we pass for other people, don't have the right to really have a voice on the job, the right to unionize. I just, at my core, had a hard time with that. And so, you know, I kept threatening, okay, but next year I'm going to pick at you if you don't let me hear this bill, you know? Yeah,
now that you're gone, you can do that.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, I know it's a hard concept for existing folks to kind of wrap their arms around, but every worker deserves a voice on the job. And yeah. I hope someday the legislative staff.
Well, and you had a lot of success with legislation. You mentioned the Amazon bill and obviously Uber and Lyft workers, gig workers in general, many other things, but you also had some disappointments. Governor Newsom vetoed a couple bills that were near and dear to you. The farm workers' rights one with regard to their union elections, and also another one to expand paid family leave. And it seems you had something of a complicated relationship with the governor. You're smiling, so I think I'm on good ground there. How would you describe it?
You know, it's actually not that complicated. I feel bad because I see Joe is on here, and I just got done doing a pretty long interview with him, and I don't want to like step on the toes of things I told him.
Yeah, that's fine.
You can step on
Joe's toes anytime. Nobody reads the Chronicle. Come on.
There he is.
I was like, I told him some stories, maybe. No, I have known Gavin Newsom for years, obviously, since he was mayor of San Francisco. When I was head of the Labor Council in San Diego, he'd come down, visit, and try to get my support on different things. So I've known him for a long time. We've had various levels of agreement and disagreement. I'm a straight shooter. You know, I'm going to tell people what I think of what they're doing at the time that they're doing it. And I think he's grown to understand that. But, you know, I think overall he's done more things than he has things that I don't like, more things that I do like. And I appreciate that and appreciate what he's done so far. But I have high expectations for what he's going to do in the future. I think that farm worker bill will come back. I expect and I hope that I'll be I can actually lobby him. So I hope and expect that I'll be lobbying him to sign that paid family leave, the expansion to ensure that there's a wage replacement. That actually has broad political support in the legislature of both Democrats and Republicans. I'm hopeful that somebody picks that up and gets it to his desk, and we'll push for that as well.
So you tweeted something this week that caught our eye, which is that when you get to Sacramento or in a legislative body, there's this saying, like, don't fall in love with your bills, kind of this idea that you shouldn't be too close to something you're trying to get over the finish line. And you, like, straight up rejected that. Can you talk about why and, like, what is your advice to the colleagues that you're leaving behind in terms of their passions?
Well, you know, that's one of the first things they tell you. And they attribute it, I think, to Willie Brown or Jess Unruh. I get confused of whose advice it was. But they say, don't fall in love with your bills. And it means different things to different people. But I remember from day one, I was like, well, why wouldn't you? I mean, that was so counterintuitive to anything that I've ever done in my life. But, you know, I fell in love with the bills, especially the bills that were big, that were hard. And I thought that was important because the way you actually make change is to go all in, to risk everything, you know. And I think one of the things that legislators unfortunately are afraid of is this perception that they lost, you know. In fact, one of the first things you asked me is, well, you've lost some things. You had some things vetoed, you know. Yeah, I have. I've had probably more vetoes than any other legislator that's currently sitting. If you look at my entire year, I should do the count. I've also probably won more victories. So we did that count. It's a little higher.
Yeah. Well, you left everything on the field.
Right. You miss all the pitches you don't swing at, right?
Exactly.
Two sports metaphors for you.
No, and I learned early, like, you know, I played Little League. I was in fact the first girl to play Little League in Vista, where I grew up. And, you know, you learn, yeah, it looks really ugly when you swing and miss and you go down swinging, but, you know, so much better than going down looking. And so for your sports metaphor, there it is.
There was a great Nike campaign a few years ago that, like, even the top hitters who, you know, hit 300 or more, they missed 2 out of 3 times, you know, and they were kind of saying, don't be afraid of failure. Listen, it was no secret that you were also interested in some statewide offices. You opened up a committee, I think, to run for Secretary of State. And then Shirley Weber, your native San Diegan, was appointed to that job. I know you were interested perhaps in the Attorney General job as well, perhaps, maybe not. So where do you think about all those things, like, quote unquote, higher office? I realize you were going to be focused on the job you have now, but do you feel like you're leaving elective office behind?
I don't know. You know, anything could happen in the future. But one of the things that's funny, I opened up a committee, of course, to run for Secretary of State. And that was my desire. I was at the time doing a lot of voting legislation. I had rationalized that we could have more people vote, that would affect working people. It was an indirect way to continue to help workers, I thought. And that was, it was tough. It was tough to see my former seatmate, my good friend, somebody who never had expressed interest in the office, be appointed. I think she's doing phenomenal. It's great. But it made me really re-examine, was that the best road forward for me? And I will say, after this last year, and especially after being diagnosed with cancer and kind of doing a lot of introspection, this job offer came at the perfect time, because at the end of the day, and everybody knows this, my single focus has always been, or my most essential focus has been, on workers and working people. And so unions and the strength of unions and how that helps everybody else in life. So to have the opportunity to join the State Federation of Labor and look forward to leading the State Federation of Labor, the largest labor organization in the United States outside of the AFL-CIO nationally, I mean, that's a dream job for somebody like me. But it still gives me one foot left in politics, one foot left in governance, and the ability at any point to say, hey, we should do something else.
Yeah. Well, Lorena Gonzalez, we wish you all the best in whatever comes next for you. And we want to thank you so much for taking time to talk to us on a very big week for you. And hope you get out of whatever that is you're in. It's not quarantine exactly, but I'm glad you're feeling well.
Thank you. It's not affecting, I'm not going to infect anyone. I have nothing to infect them with, but if I did, I'm not going to infect anyone. I'm just kind of hanging out at my house.
All right. Former Assemblywoman Lorena Gonzalez, thank you so much. We're going to take a short break. And when we come back, we're going to look ahead to politics in 2022 with the San Francisco Chronicle's Joe Garofoli. You're listening to Political Breakdown from KQED Public Radio.
Support for this podcast comes from San Francisco International Airport. Some want it all. SFO wants zero. Zero landfill waste, net carbon, and net energy by 2030. Learn more about the triple zero goal at flysfo.com.
I'm John Glenn Hill, host of The Weeds. And I know that politics can feel like a joke, and not always in the ha-ha funny way. On The Weeds, we try to split the difference.
When you think run out of money, you think that we're going to get to a point where, like, one guy retires and Social Security is like, sorry, y'all, got to board up.
Like that's it. Sorry, he got the last check.
I always call him Jim. Like, Jim got it. Sorry, y'all. He got the last check, and that's all the checks we got, and Social Security is no more.
Check out The Weeds every Wednesday, wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Political Breakdown. I'm Scott Schaefer, here with Marisa Lagos. And joining us now is one of our favorite colleagues in the world of political journalism, Joe Garofoli, senior political writer with the San Francisco Chronicle. Joe, Happy New Year. Welcome back to Political Breakdown.
Well, it's always good to be here, and thank you for those kind words. Unlike the insults you were hurling at me, you know, in the previous segment.
That's because we knew you were muted.
Yeah, I know. You tell me, be muted, and then you're going to rip me.
That's the only time Garofoli gets muted. Well, let's begin with your column today, which talks about the GOP a year after January 6th, and included the phrase, "Why can't the Republicans quit Donald Trump?" And I appreciated that Brokeback Mountain reference.
Yes.
And I bet Liz Cheney did too, coming from Wyoming. But
maybe not, actually. Yeah. That's a whole other story.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, that's a complicated story.
Yeah, it is. What's your take, though, on where the party is and this, you know, they try to be, you know, disavowing, but also they just can't let go of him.
Right. They're in no person's land. They know that the base of the party still is in Trump's camp, so they candidates can't tick those folks off. And at the same time, how can they grow the party in a state where two-thirds of the folks, of the voters here, voted against Trump and still find him reprehensible? How can they grow the party if they don't speak out against him? And nobody, very few people, want to go into the breach.
I gotta say, like, it's so interesting because, I mean, clearly, nationally, they're more relevant than ever, right? And so, like, right. And then you see that this has not been a decline in California among the GOP that started with Trump. This started 25 years ago with Prop 187 and, quite frankly, some of the same themes, nativism, anti-immigration. But, like, I just, it seems like, I mean, like, do they have anywhere to go? I mean, Scott, where do you think? Like, if you're Jessica Milan Patterson, the head of the California GOP, what do you do in 22?
You know, I don't think they have a good playbook for this. I mean, they've got some candidates who they think might be in the mold of the more moderate kind of candidate, like Lanhee Chen from Stanford, the Hoover Institution, who worked for Mitt Romney. He's going to try to run for controller. But, you know, we all know this. They haven't won a statewide race since 2006. And we saw what happened to Larry Elder last time around. I just wonder, you know, Kevin McCarthy, of course, is poised perhaps to become speaker if they can, you know, win back the House.
And if he has a district.
Well, yeah. And yet, Joe, you know, we've seen Kevin McCarthy reach for this before and kind of fall flat.
Right. And I think he may have learned his lesson this time. And if there's a wave election, you'd think he'd be the speaker because he led the Republicans to that. He recruited many of the candidates. There is a, you know, the one Kevin, another Kevin from California who tried that or could have possibly been that type of different Republican was Kevin Faulkner, who, you know, was seen as a moderate Republican, led the mayor, former mayor of the second largest city in the state in San Diego. But then, you know, he fell into that same trap. He didn't vote for Trump in 2016. He wrote in Paul Ryan's name. And then in 2020, he voted for Trump. And so he's going to be, you know, you're not all one vote and everything. But you know, if he runs again, he will be painted as a Trump supporter. And that's, you know, it's poison in California.
Right. But
and
it's
he's still
not
deciding whether to run, by the way. He's still and he very well may now that the Elder's out and there's no major Republican running for governor. That's pathetic.
Yeah. Well, you know, and yet, then you got in the Central Valley, you got David Valadao, who, you know, who lost in 2018, won it back in 2020. Now his district may be a little tougher for him, and he's going to have some tough opposition. You know, but he voted for impeachment, one of very few Republicans in California to do that. And yet, you know, you can see he's now sort of in a fix because he's just kind of waiting for the other shoe to drop with Trump to come after him.
Right. And as you alluded to, he has a tough opponent this time, Rudy Salas, who's an assemblyman who's from the area. He's going to have a lot of money behind him. Valadao is one of the Republicans in California who is in trouble in the House, incumbent Republicans who is in trouble. Another one is Mike Garcia in suburban Los Angeles. His district in the redistricting process lost Simi Valley, as we all know, the home of the Ronald Reagan Presidential Library. And so his district got a lot more Democratic, and he's going to have some trouble. He's got several Democrats running against him. So there's two incumbent Republicans right there who are going to be in trouble.
Right. And we're also, the Central Valley is one thing we saw, you know, I think Josh Harder, Democrat out of Modesto, has a slightly more challenging district. But Orange County, I mean, that's been for years, it was this Republican stronghold. And, you know, 4 years ago, wait, what year is it?
Yeah, 4 years.
Yeah,
ago.
It'll be
yes.
4 years ago. 2018, it really became this battleground. You know, these flipping of seats back and forth over the past few years. And now we see Michelle Steele and Young Kim, two Republicans who won, Asian American women. It looks like both of their seats are going to be a challenge, as is Katie Porter for her in Irvine, a rising star in the Democratic Party. So, I mean, do we think this could all just like wash out, right? Like it's like one district flips.
Like a surfboard at Huntington Beach.
Yeah, Michelle Steele is going to have a little, probably the most problems out of that crew. Her district definitely got a little bit more Democratic and a little more inland. But at the same time, it got more Asian, like almost the number of Asian American voters doubled. So she might, you know, it'll be it's a toss up. I think that some of the national prognosticators.
Well, what do you make either one of you? I mean, what the difference, of course, one difference between 2018 and 2020 is in 2020, Trump was on the ballot and he won't be on the ballot in 2022. You know, what are your thoughts about what difference that'll make? And obviously he did, as Jessica Milan Patterson said, he brought out the voters.
Right. And he, that's Democrats are going to try to make sure he is on the ballot again. They're going to.
But is that really a winning strategy? I don't know.
No, it's we'll see. I mean, it's what they got in some of those districts where there are swing districts. Another issue that they're going to try and bring out is abortion to bring out their voters. The specter of the Supreme Court, which it's very likely to overturn or at least gut in some ways Roe v. Wade. They're hoping that the abortion issue is something that'll bring out their voters. Because remember, a lot of these Democratic voters are pissed off right now. They said, "Hey, Biden, we voted for you. We voted for a Democratic Congress. We wanted big things happening," and they feel that it's not been happening. And some of those coastal districts in Southern California, and the environment's a big issue. And nothing's happened on climate so far, certainly not what was promised.
Hmm. Right. On the flip side, I mean, it's not, you're Michelle Steele, you're defending a seat right where there was that huge oil spill. I mean, it's a little messy for all folks, for both sides. And I'm wondering, everyone's thoughts on the pandemic. I mean, obviously it's early yet, right? But we are in yet another surge, another variant. We're seeing all this debate around schools and reopening. I mean, my personal feeling is it's kind of early to know whether this is going to be an issue by November because we've just gone through so much. But I don't know. I mean, Joe, do you think, because it seems what's happening right now is that there is some disagreement, some fracturing among the left around how to handle this latest surge.
Yeah, and that has a practical implication and a policy one too. A couple of years ago, in 2020, Democrats said that one of the reasons they weren't able to do better in the House and one of the reasons they lost some of those seats to Republicans in California was they weren't able to do door-to-door campaigning, which the Democrats, that's what they thrive on. They thrive on getting those union voters out that Lorena's going to be in charge of. and they're not going to be, they weren't able to do as much of that. And that's why they lost, they say. On the policy aspect, we're going to see at least one ballot measure, possibly two, from Republicans, from conservative forces, that would basically be school choice ballot measures, would allow parents to use state tax dollars to go to whatever public or private school they want to. Republicans think that's their get out the vote measure for this year because that is a very big issue to conservatives. But it's also, as Marisa, as you say, it's also becoming an issue for the left. Parents are very frustrated with school closures and they're turning on teachers.
Exactly. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Political Breakdown. Scott Schaefer here with Marisa Lagos. We're talking with the San Francisco Chronicle's senior political writer, Joe Garofoli, about the year ahead in politics.
And senior.
Senior. You're not a senior. Come on.
What? You know, you guys are so ageist.
Hey, it's your title, bro.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey,
Mateer told me it's a terrible title. He told Mateer, he's like, why don't take that off the title?
Yeah, I'm a senior too, but at least I'm closer in age to the reality. Okay, let's not go there. What about Latino voters? Because, you know, I've talked to a number of Democratic consultants who are really worried. They've seen some shift away from Democrats in the last couple of election cycles. I think COVID did not help. A lot of Latinos were disproportionately hurt economically by the close down, the shutdowns. What are your thoughts about that? Marisa, start with you. Like what do the Democrats have to do, or is that just much ado about nothing?
I guess I kind of feel like we all need to reframe how we talk about not just Latinos, but like broader groups. I think that what we've seen in the last few elections is the reality that people don't vote based on the demographic sort of tags next to their names, right? And that I think, you know, there has been a taking for granted, honestly, of Latinos and other voters of color by Democrats. I think when you dig into it, there's a lot of difference generationally, regionally, just like there are among, say, women, right? And so, like, I almost think that some of this is like, we need to change how we think about this, and that, like, it might be more accurate if, you know, you're talking or trying to appeal to voters to be thinking about other things that they might actually sort of not hold closer, because I think people's identity is super important, but like that actually drive their voting pattern. So if you are Latino in the Central Valley, you will probably have different concerns than if you are a Latino living in San Diego, you know?
Yeah, and to your point, you know, Rudy Salas is running for Congress against Valadao, and he's Latino, of course, and you'd think that will help bring out Latino. I think a lot of voters think Valadao is Latino. He's actually Portuguese. But what do you think, Joe? I mean, is that going to give him, you know, maybe an additional lift?
It may, but I'm with Marisa on this, and I think that it's certainly with Latino voters and with other voters, I think economic issues are going to be paramount. I mean, it's the pocketbook issues. We are, if you look at California, we are the coast has one lifestyle and one economic pattern for the most part, and the inland California has a different one, and they have different priorities, and they are struggling a lot more than many folks on the coast are, and I think that's going to be a pocketbook issue. And the other thing is, like, you know, I was talking to Mike Madrid, who we all know. He's studied the California Republic, used to be California Republican political director, and has studied the Latino electorate. He was saying, you know, it's much more about one reason that Latinos are moving to the Republican Party in other states is over some of these economic issues. The reason that hasn't happened so far in California is because, I think, as Marisa alluded to earlier, we have this history of anti-Latino measures, Prop 87 and so on, from 20 years ago that really politicized a generation of folks and moved them to the Democratic Party because those measures were pushed by Republicans.
Right.
So it's a different dynamic here, but at the same time, I think the economic matters. I'm as a pseudo Marxist, I always think it's all about the money.
Okay, well, but the other thing that is going to, I think, be a big issue for Democrats and Republicans in 22, and that is, again, splitting folks on the left, is around criminal justice. And Rudy Salas is a great example of this. You know, he's running for this district for Congress in the Central Valley where he lives, and he actually introduced legislation this week that would essentially roll back one portion of Proposition 47. That was the 2014 ballot measure that changed a lot of, felonies to misdemeanors for possession of simple drugs, things like that. But we've seen so much attention paid to it by opponents because they really blame a lot of the retail crime and other things happening. And it just strikes me that the fact that you have somebody like him positioning himself as not necessarily opposed to all the reforms, but saying, no, we need to take a look at this, like, that is a sea change, and speaks to, I think, the challenge Democrats are seeing when they frame criminal justice reform.
Well, and we're going to see two very big tests of that here in San Francisco, June 7th, where Chesa Boudin, the progressive DA, is facing a recall. And, you know, that's going to be kind of the coming attractions for November when you've got Rob Bonta, the attorney general, who has never faced a statewide electorate before, being challenged by the more conservative former Republican DA in Sacramento, Anne Marie Schubert. There's also a Republican running as well, Hockman. But, this is one of those issues where you can look at statistics and they can say one thing, but if people aren't feeling safe, they want to feel safe and they're going to make a change.
Absolutely. And so much of this issue is not going to be framed by policy or statistics, by what people see every day and by what people see on their social media, by what people see on television. And that's, all the crime that they see, the thefts, the mass thefts and such. And that is going to have an exaggerated toll on a lot of these races. It's the Democrats are facing an uphill battle in that. Bonta and Chesa Boudin fighting his recall. The one advantage that Bonta may have in that statewide race is that Anne-Marie Schubert is an independent, and so many people vote reflexively R or D. She is going to have neither next to her name, so it's going to be a challenge.
All right, Joe,
it's a long road. It's a long road ahead.
Road ahead, Joe. Thanks so much for joining us. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Buon Capodanno to both of you.
All right, go Steelers. That does it for this edition of Political Breakdown, our first episode of 2022. Our producer is Guy Marzorati. Our engineer, Katie McMurrin. I'm Scott Schaefer. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Scott Schaefer.
And I'm Risa Lagos. You can find me on Twitter at MLagos. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week.
Cheers.